The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Alright, welcome along to the football show sponsored by AIB. As we didn't get a chance last week to talk about Joe McMahon, a player I really love, a brilliant all-rounder, and he retired last week. And when someone of his stature retires, we should probably be giving him a shout out on the show.
Yeah, certainly. Joe was a fantastic servant to Tyrone over the last 11-12 years. A double All-Ireland winner. You know, he was the player on the team that you could play from any position from 2 to 15 and was comfortable in all positions that he played in. I was fortunate in a way that I played with him, with Ireland, represented Ireland in the international rules with him. He was a great character, fantastic player, and you know, he was a real, you know, light-hearted guy who loved the fun and crack of being involved in the football team as well, outside of the you know, hustle and bustle of the team environment as well, and always the life and soul of a party, and a brilliant player. I couldn't speak highly enough of Joe. I was unfortunate enough to come up against him often enough as well, and he always seemed to keep maybe his best performances when Armagh were playing Tyrone, and certainly got the upper hand on us during his time. But you know, a player that you would love to have in your team, and you know, he'll be sorely missed by the Tyrone camp.
I was going to ask, did you ever have any run-ins of him on the pitch? Because he wasn't exactly an angel either on the pitch, was he?
No, I never really had any run-ins. He would have picked up Clarkey quite a bit. It would have obviously played in alongside him, but no, I know before the 2008 All-Ireland final with himself and Tommy Walsh and Kieran Donaghy and all, you know, there was words exchanged, and but you know, believe it or not, Joe McMahon and Kieran Donaghy are pretty close mates, you know, and got to know each other through the international rules, and you know, I never ever had any run-ins with him. You know, I always felt that he played football the way it should be played. Listen, on any given day, any player can say something on the pitch, and as you know, you don't pass any remarks of it. But Joe wasn't one of those players that was verbally abusive to too many players.
No, he wasn't. I marked him in 2004 in a qualifier game. He was wing back then, so yeah. Like, I mean, talking about being versatile, then like he had a brilliant year at wing forward for Tyrone in 2008, and then in the final goes back into corner back to mark one of the big lads. Like, I mean, number one, Mickey Hart to do that is an incredible thing to do in an All-Ireland final, and then for Joe just to go, yeah, no problem, I'm playing great. Because remember, he got a brilliant goal against Dublin, wasn't that in 2008?
Yeah, it was the All-Ireland semi-final.
What
I think
a finish that was for a fella who usually plays in the half back line or whatever. Like, I mean, I thought that wing forward position suited him down to the ground. Like,
yeah, but he had experience of playing fullback before, because in 2005 in the All-Ireland semi-final he played fullback marking Ronan Clark.
Right.
Particular year, and
I think 2004 was his debut year, was it? Because I hadn't heard of him when I was marking him. I was like, I might give this lad a bit of a
actually kick. Reading an interview last week, he was saying that he was watching from the stands in the 2003 final, so 2004 was obviously his debut year, but he made a big impact coming in, getting his championship debut and starts in 2005. Played in the fullback line that year, moved further up the pitch. I think he scored 1-2 or 1-3 in that particular All-Ireland semi-final in 2008.
Yeah.
And going from that to going back to Mark, and you know, the twin threat of Tommy Walsh and Kieran Donaghy, no mean feat, but him and his brother, you know, certainly got the upper hand on the two guys that day, and you know, they were instrumental in Tyrone's victory.
They were big time. I think he's maybe been done a disservice by that, you know, that iconic picture where he's shouting in Tommy Walsh's face, because he wasn't really like that on the field. No. I found him a complete gentleman on the field, actually, you know, where a lot of them might have been into that. I don't think Joe was necessarily into that. I think maybe he just got carried away in that moment in that All-Ireland final.
It's an All-Ireland final, and you want to be pumped up, you want to be upbeat, and you want to try to, you know, I suppose, inspire your team mates, but get one over your opponent as well, and put the fear of God in them. And Joe, you know, with the image of Joe with the big grizzly beard that particular time, you know,
that was great though with Tyrone, wasn't it? They all grew the beards. There was a real sense of we're in this together and we're on that roll. Like, I just thought it was a great idea, regardless of anything else.
Yeah, plenty of teams have tried it since then, you know. They always look for wee secret formula.
Yeah, and they were shaving pretty quickly.
But they look like they were going to war, and they actually were going to war
like
as
Bobby
well.
Bobby Sands sort of did. McManaman and Joe did.
But, you know, there was no doubt, he wasn't that type of player on the pitch. He was a class act, so he was on the pitch, and certainly my dealings with him off the pitch, he was a class act as well. And as I said, you know, I loved playing alongside him. I would have loved if he was from Armagh, because he was that versatile, and you could play him anywhere and trust him to play anywhere and get a performance from him. And more times than not, that's what he done for Tyrone.
Yeah, right, great stuff. And congratulations on a great career, Joe, if you're listening. I want to talk about Colm Collins here quickly, lads, because they're playing Limerick at the weekend, and I think it was in the Irish Independent, he was talking about the lack of coaches around the country. And I'm looking back at my career and I'm thinking, I never really had a coach at inter-county level. You had a manager, but you never necessarily had a coach that actually coached the game plan. It was like, how are we going to play? You know, not a real clear kind of idea about how we're going to play. Yeah. The manager wasn't sure, might have known his stuff about Gaelic football, but wasn't necessarily able to get down on the field and actually show it. So you'd have a physical trainer who'd have you running and get you physically fit. But sometimes the physical trainer would try to do some ball work with you, and it was an awful mess because he wasn't a coach. But and now the game is evolving into, there's 100% in most big counties, there's a manager. The physical trainer is also a coach, which is absolutely vital.
Yeah, I think maybe in years gone by, the problem was with our game, physical trainers who probably weren't necessarily coming from a GAA background were tasked with, you know, coaching boys as well in terms of their ball skills and trying to implement game plans and things like that as well. But you know, times have certainly changed. We were fortunate enough when Joe Kiernan came into the Armagh setup that he had Paul Grimley in the background with, as a coach with him, and Paul Grimley was an excellent coach.
Right.
He could coach how we wanted to play, how we wanted our system to develop.
So you were way ahead of the game on that then?
Well, Joe Kiernan was ahead of the game because he had to select his, you know, the team of coaches and managers, or his background team, and he was ahead of the game. I had never had any dealings with Paul Grimley until he became involved with Armagh in 2002, but, you know, within a short period of time we were certainly blown away by him, because this was something new for me personally, it was something new for us, and he was an excellent coach. He had an excellent way and manner with the players as well. He's a real team man, and you know, great at putting the arm around players, but great at instructing a player how to play and going about it on the practice field as well.
Yeah, that's it. Like, I mean, I don't know, Colm Collins is saying there's a serious lack of coaches, and he's out in the market looking for them because he's had 4 in 4 years. He's on to his third in 3 years. Alan Flynn is his latest recruit. He had Mick Bowen and he had Elfie Fitzgerald as well, and Paddy Cassan. He's actually on to his fourth in 4 years.
Doesn't say a lot about the other ones that are gone.
Well, it's a strange one. They might have all genuine reasons for leaving, because not like Clare aren't going well and it looks like a good setup, but you know, he's on to his fourth one and he's out in the market looking for them, and he says it's very, very difficult market. There are not enough GAA, you know, Gaelic football coaches out there.
I mean, I would certainly agree, because, you know, having been involved in management and coaching over the past couple of years, there is certainly a huge difference. So there is, you know, a manager lays the law down, speaks about the game plan, instructs his coach how to what he wants to do, and the coach has to go and develop that game plan on the pitch and get it across to the players in a way that they understand it. Too often what happens is, in a coaching background, a coach tries to be the manager, you know, and doesn't play the role of the coach, and it causes confusion as well, and that could be the case in that situation.
But that's why I think a manager has to be a good coach. I think otherwise you're undermined too much and you don't have respect. You need to know what you're talking about the best.
But does he not instruct the coach what to do? He wouldn't be undermined if the coach is following his, like, the manager has to have a master plan of how he wants his team to play, how he wants them set up.
But I think he should be able to implement that then himself. I think he knows best.
Yeah, but you see, this is the thing. If I always think, if I was a manager, right, I don't think I would go down coaching. I would help, but I don't want to be running around going, come on now, let's go now, then you go to, like, I'm not that type of person. I don't want to be that fella, and I want that separation from the players, that they don't always want to be me harping onto them, if you know what I mean. I want someone to do that dirty work for me, but I'm telling him exactly what I want.
I know what you mean. My idea, though, of coaching isn't just, you know, doing drills and getting them fit. It's, I think the best bit of coaching is when you're on the pitch, you're playing 15v15 and you're stopping the game and saying, right, why the hell are you there? What are you doing here? You should be there, pointing it out. Just
I think a manager
has to do that as well. I think it's actually a two-way thing there. A manager and a coach must do that. But I would disagree with you in terms of the manager shouldn't be on the pitch instructing as well. A manager has to have a certain amount of common sense when it comes to coaching as well. Has to understand and know what he expects from his players as well. He can't just hand the full reins across.
But I don't think the manager should be shouting, right, get 15 over here and 15, you know, like, I mean, there are drills you can do that help with your game plan. You know, the drills should be completely tailored towards what your game plan is, then go into a match and run through in a match situation.
Absolutely.
But I don't want to, if I was the manager, I wouldn't want to be organising this stuff. You know, do you get what I'm saying? I'd like the coach to be organising these drills. And
no, there's no doubt about it. And I'm a firm believer of every drill that you do and carry out in a training session must be related to the type of system that you want to implement on a match day. And, you know, how many coaches actually think about that? You know, if you're playing a kicking game, what's the point in coaches doing short-sighted hand pass games and short-sighted, you know, fist pass drills? You know, try to work the ball and kick the ball as much as possible. And Cross McGlenn, we spoke about them in the past, are the best example of this that you can use. They're a kicking team. They, you know, from underage the whole way up, it's the same structure throughout their club. All their teams play a kicking brand of football, and you often hear that their training sessions are constantly about kicking and perfecting the kick pass and very limited. Yes, you have to do some type of hand pass drills because you have to be able to do it, but very, very limited in terms of what they do and the volume that they do in kicking.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. That's important.
I was going, like, my reference point, the best coach I've worked under is also the best manager. I was lucky enough to have him at Jordan time, was Mickey Moran, and like, he was great at that. It was just pure football. The first thing he ever said to us was like, this is not a fitness club. If you want to go running, go away. Like, you know, we're playing football here, you'll get fit with the football. But it was always games. Now, I know it's different at university where it's just like, let's see what we have here. But just the advice that that he was going through just on the pitch, him and Adrian McGuckin just walking around, giving you little tips as you're going along, saying you should be going more direct, just getting boys to be a bit more urgent with things. It's just, you learned so much there, like, in a couple of years with those guys.
No, I think 100%. And when Mick O'Dwyer, we played some great football under Mick O'Dwyer, because we played football the minute like February or March would end, we'd go from the laps to football. It was like,
I was going to ask, was it a myth then about the laps?
No, we did the laps during the winter, but then when you'd be into the middle of the league, you'd play a match in the evening. And you do that every night. Now, there's one way of looking at that. It was great for our football skills, and Mikko would be there coaching you, and he'd give you great confidence if you did a nice thing. But at the same time, it got a bit much where, like, the match should be, you know, it should be a bit of a novelty. You should really enjoy it, and it should be for a reason. When we did it every single night, the intensity's always dropped, you know, and I don't think we got as much out of it as what we could have. Like, training, one thing always important with training for me is variety, is landing to training and not really being sure what you're going to do that night. Yeah. Players need that, you know what I mean? There's nothing worse than driving down the car going, I know exactly what we're doing now, and that's depressing, you know, for a player. So any bit of advice for any coaches is varied. Variety.
Yeah, when you were playing those matches, was it the starting 15 generally against the next 15? There should be a level of competition in there.
Yeah, but the problem with this was, Stevie, and this was a big fault of Mikko's, is Mikko never changed a winning team, right? Yeah. And he knew that, and everybody knew that. So the B team was completely demotivated to actually try against the A team. The odd time there might be a good game, but wasn't on a consistent level, because the B team never felt that they were ever getting in the mix, no matter how well they did.
For any successful team, the starting 15 certainly should be almost impossible to break into, but you know,
there has to be a couple
of places up for grabs there, and there has to be an incentive for players to turn up who's not in the starting 15 to really drive and make the manager think about his selection
and then be rewarded for that, and have the whole panel see that he's been rewarded. And Jim Gavin's good at that, it's going well in training. Eamon Fitzmaurice is brilliant at it. Like, Eamon Fitzmaurice picks his team on training, and that's great to a certain extent, but you still don't want fellas who are all stars in training who bottle it on the big day, you know. But managers will kind of know.
Mike McGurn has a famous quote about that there, you know, train like Tarzan and play like Jane, and there's too many players playing the game nowadays that are like that. You know, on a Tuesday and Thursday night, they're setting the world alight, but then you put them out in a match on Sunday and they're not able to implement exactly what they're doing on a Tuesday.
Just like me, Stephen.
It's actually gas. Origins. Most people know these fellas on a panel, and a manager learns pretty quickly about these lads that are brilliant in training. But then sometimes you change over managers, and they have to learn that. So these fellas are getting more games again because, like, you know, they're flying it in training.
And you're rolling your eyes because you know he's
yeah. So this will last maybe three games now before he learns about this fella. Anyways, I want to move on to this war of words, lads, between Bernard Flynn and James Horan. It's all a bit silly, really. Obviously, Bernard Flynn, I think he was very kind of opportunistic and I think unfair to pull this example of Aidan O'Shea. We talked a lot about Aidan O'Shea being targeted and being unfair last Thursday. This is even before Bernard Flynn put the boot in on him. We didn't get that. We didn't have that news because none of us listened to the podcast that he was on. But he talked about him not doing the warm-up and signing selfies and all. And there just wasn't enough information for us to base an opinion on, because there's information since saying the match was three thirds, Aidan didn't play the last third, he had done his warm-up, he was just
warmed down
after the pitch, and he got caught off by a couple of players. I just thought we weren't there and we don't know enough. Like, I mean, there's loads of scenarios in a challenge game where lads are taken off seven or eight together and they'll do their warm down, you know, and we don't know enough information. But I don't even want to get into that because it's just nonsense. And I think it was opportunistic by Bernard Flynn. I've no problem saying it to him. It was unfair. He was just jumping on Tomás O'Shea's bandwagon that Tomás O'Shea had wrote about the week before, which I also thought was unfair, and we spoke about that. But James Horan called him a tit and an idiot last week. So Bernard has responded, right? War of words is rightly kicked off. Bernard Flynn has responded in his column for the Irish Mirror, which I'd say about four people read. And he said, have you ever heard anyone saying they've read the Irish Mirror for GAA? Yeah, I was just reading in the Irish Mirror, said nobody ever. But he said that James Horan has never won an All-Ireland. You know, so who does he think he is? And then he says, anyone that knows me well knows I'm neither of the above. That is, neither a tit nor an idiot. So he's coming back at James Horan. Now, I wouldn't say James Horan is going to say anything more about this. I think
it'll be put to bed very sharp. But my take on the Aidan O'Shea thing is, if he was finished and he played his role in the game and he was cooling down, you know, he's one of the highest profile names in our game, okay? If there's an opportunity there for kids to get to meet him, you know, he should take that on board and respect the kids, for maybe give them an opportunity to sign autographs, give them an opportunity to pose for photographs, and that's what he done. And you know, you're not going to turn away any kid who wants a photograph or an autograph. Maybe the timing of it was wrong, but you know, from Aidan O'Shea's point of view, you know, I don't think he done anything wrong in that regard.
It has to be pointed out, in the scenario that Aidan O'Shea finished that challenge game and the team are in a huddle talking about it, and he wasn't in that huddle, he was taking savvy. Aidan O'Shea is wrong in that scenario. Like, 100%.
I would agree with that there. He's wrong in that situation.
You can't have that thing. If the whole squad was there and he was just this outlier doing his own thing, that's wrong. And I think that was the picture that was being painted.
Yeah.
But if he didn't play the second half and he's floating around, you know what I mean? Yeah. That's a different scenario completely.
It's an opportunity for kids to get to meet some of their heroes, and it could have been another player. But I would agree totally. If I'm a manager and I have my players in a huddle at the end of a match and I'm talking to them, I want every player in that huddle, regardless of who they are.
But if they weren't, you would shout them over.
Exactly. So, you know, do we know the full facts of this or how it actually materialised? But if it was a case that you say he didn't play the second half or the last third or quarter or whatever of the match, and he was floating around the place, and there was an opportunity for young kids who admire Aidan O'Shea to get a photograph or an autograph, and he stood for them willingly to do so, then I applaud him for doing it.
I think we'll agree on that, Conan, quickly.
I was going to say the thing about the war of words that I didn't like, I mean, as much as I love the tit and Egypt defence, you know, I'm not a titter in Egypt. He sort of had a go with James Horan for not winning All-Ireland in the last 4 years, and he ultimately failed, and you know, it's sort of, he said he's coming out at him because he failed in his task of winning All-Ireland. For God's sake, they lost to Dublin.
Yeah, but sure, we all know that if you don't win an All-Ireland, you've no business ever saying anything in the GAA. Stevie's the only one who is worth listening to on this
you
podcast.
Guys better keep quiet for the next half hour.
1 minute, I have a minor All-Ireland. We forgot about that one.
No, let's
and
just scrap that rule.
I actually have three All-Ireland medals. I've got two runners-up, one of failing in Oak and one in 2003.
I have an All-Ireland fail if you want to go down that road, Stevie.
Okay.
There's two for me. Jeez, I'm really cranking this up.
I have one on North Derry under 13.
All Ireland.
Right, lads, listen, we're going to have to leave it there because I'm delighted to say Cork legend Billy Morgan is on the line. Billy, I was reading an interview you did in the Irish Examiner last November, and you said, we slipped back into Division 2 of the league, which mightn't be the worst thing in the world, as we might get back to winning ways again. That hasn't exactly worked out.
Well, at the time, I did, you know, you can't beat winning. It, you know, it builds up confidence. I got slipping down into the second team, going to be the worst thing in the world. You know, get back to winning ways, get promotion. But it didn't work out like that. And so I really don't know where we are now.
What do you think the problem is down there, Billy? Because, like, I mean, you won an All-Ireland in 2010. You've been dominating the Munster Championship at under-21 level, but there seems to be a gradual slide that doesn't seem to be stopping.
Well, as you say, prior to this year, it was last 12... Munster on 21 championship, Cork had won 9, Tipperary had won 2, and Kerry 1. So there is talent there. And after the 2010 All Ireland, I expected we'd kick on and you know, win another few. Why it has dropped back, I am not sure. I think all the resources, financially and you, were put into the building of this new stadium. John Cleary was the obvious choice as manager, and I know he would have taken it, but there were certain conditions that he wanted as regards training facilities and stuff like that, which weren't available because the money wasn't there to be poured into the stadium, and he pulled out, and then there was a long period where they couldn't get a manager. I think it went about nine weeks before they could get one, and you know, the public and all that started to lose interest in the team, and I don't know, it got off on the wrong foot from the start.
Yeah, Paddy Kelly retired recently and he was talking about the facilities, and that's obviously been an issue because he said they were scrambling around looking even for a pitch, which sounds incredible at senior intercounty level in a county like Cork, that the senior intercounty football team wouldn't even have a pitch.
We used to be, I remember, you know, going cap in hand to different clubs to try and get a pitch to train during the winter. Obviously, clubs did not want to give out their pitches. I don't blame them, you know, during the winter period because they're resting them, and you know, so we were going from pillar to post looking for places to train, and I would have had imagined that by now Cork would have a permanent home as other counties do, but to my knowledge the same story still applies, that they're still you know, hopping around from place to place looking for a place to train.
Yeah, it's incredible stuff. And I wouldn't mind, but Páirc Uí Chaoimh isn't going to fix that problem, Billy, because there's going to be a main pitch and an all-weather pitch. But sure, how many inter-county teams are going to want to train on that?
We're getting one extra pitch, but for all the teams, like between hurling and football, you know, looking for a place to train, the problem isn't solved, really, you know. I don't know. I honestly don't know.
There's obviously issues, you know, with facilities and things like that. But on the playing side of things, Billy, when you see fellas like Paddy Kelly, Fintan Gould, Daniel Goulding, these fellas have a lot more to offer. They're not at retirement age, I wouldn't think. You know, why are they just dropping off?
It's another good question. Like, I think all three would be 31 years of age this year, which certainly isn't old. Like, they won an All-Ireland under-21 this time 10 years ago. And,
yeah.
You know, I would have thought they would have been in their prime now. But I know Paddy had back problems. Fintan didn't figure that much last year. He came back into the squad for the Donegal game. Daniel, I actually met him last week at the Cork Minor game, and he looked very fit. It's not for me to say, but I would have imagined that they would still have had a part to play. That's, I mean, Paul Kerrigan is the same age, he was on that same 121 team, and you know, he's going well. And I don't know, at the inside, you know, their form is like, or whatever, I just don't know.
I saw you were on record for saying that an outside coach might not be the worst idea in Cork. You know, I don't know what reason you thought that.
Well, at the stage, if known coach is the best option, then I have no objection to that. But I still think John Cleary was the man for the job. He had a very good record, 21 level. Like, he coached the A's in Ireland last year. And like, he would be my choice, but whether he would ever go back or not, I don't know.
So it's just been kind of a probably resources issue with getting the best manager, because you know, certain managers want certain standards, and if the county board can't give them that, they don't want the job.
Well, the situation was last year there were three candidates, more or less, outside of John Cleary. You had Ronan McCarthy, who was selector, Brian Cuthbert, and Conor Coonan, E.C. Fitzgerald, you know, who had a very good track record, coaching up in four counties in a row, and Ned English. And it became obvious that the county board didn't want them for one reason or another. And then at the very last minute, Padraig Healy came in, and there had been no talk about him. So I don't know, was it a case of at the last minute, look, let's get somebody in and just get the job filled again?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. What's the solution to all this, Billy? Because, like, I mean, you obviously have players in Cork, and the results aren't reflecting that at senior level. Like, the only two teams Cork beat in Division 2 were Fermanagh and Derry, who got relegated. You know, like, how do Cork fix this problem?
Good question. If, you know, we could have, you know, we're playing Waterford on Saturday. We should get over that one, and then we have a meeting with Tipperary in the semi-final, and that won't be easy. But I do feel if they got past them, you know, it might build confidence. Like, I remember going back to 93, the first round of the championship, Cork played Clare and Ennis, and Clare were Munster champions, and believe it or not, they were favourites to win that game. And we went up to Ennis, not expected to do much, and beat them well, and beat, you know, and played well. Like, I remember Colin Carkery, it would have been his debut when he, you know, getting a great goal, and we won well. And it did build confidence. We beat Kerry in the semi final, and things snowballed, and we went on and possibly should have won the All Ireland against Derry later that year, beaten in the final. So something like that could be, you know that would spark it. Like, I mean, if they get over Waterford and beat Tipperary, they will then go into the Munster final against Kerry with nothing to lose, and you know, it could be a case of then, look, let's go and just, you know, play with abandon, go at them. So hopefully something like that might happen.
Yeah. How much do Cork footballers need that bit of confidence and that bit of arrogance, you know, that Cork are known for? Because, like, you know, they definitely don't seem to have it at the moment.
Well, their confidence, you know, is low at the moment. There's no doubt about that. Like, they played down in the last match of the league, and down were relegated, and Cork could only draw with them. And at that game, there's, you know, some of the players looked low in confidence. As a young fellow there, Ian McGuire, who I have great time for, and I think could be the future of Cork football. But He's a midfielder, which I think is a strong midfielder, but he's been playing wing forward and taken off, and that's hit your confidence. But, you know, if, as I said, if we could, you know, get to the Munster final, we're nothing to lose, go out, have a cut, play without fear, you know, it might bring us back. It's happened before.
Yeah, it has happened before, because only 2 years ago, in 2015, Cork went to Killarney and Kerry, defending All-Ireland champions, and should have beaten them that day. Kerry got out of jail. So, like, I mean, you know, if Cork are going well, they still have the players. That's the frustrating thing, I suppose, being a Cork man, is that the players, I think, looking in from the outside, are in the county, but you just don't seem to be putting results together.
Well, I go back to what I said earlier, you know, winning 9 out of 12 Munster under 21 championships, and also a couple of All-Irelands. Also, a lot of those Cork players have done very well in Sigerson with the QCC. I mean, a lot of people look at, like, UCC won 2 Sigerson the last 2 years, and people look at that, you know, the Kerry players that came through it. But there were an awful lot more Cork players and those teams than Kerry players. I mean, we can go back to 2011, I think. Cork absolutely hockeyed Kerry in the Munster Under 21 Championship. And 3 years later, 2014, Kerry won the All Ireland, senior All Ireland, with, I think, 11 of those players and the panel. 5 or 6 of them actually playing in starting 15. Whereas Cork, that night, I remember, like, they had fellas like Aidan Welsh, Mark Collins, Barry O'Driscoll, Damien Callahan, and you would think that the future of Cork football is going to be bright. Now, those players aren't old by any measure of means. No, they'd be coming into their prime.
Yeah.
So, as you say, Colin, I think the players are there. It's just a question of building confidence and, you know, getting some sort of a run.
Come here, Billy, before I let you go, I wanted to ask you about the new phenomenon of goalkeepers, being a brilliant goalkeeper yourself, goalkeepers coming up to take all these frees and these 45s. What do you think of it?
I cannot understand that you can't get a footballer from, say, your half back line or midfield up that can't kick the ball over the bar from 45 metres. There are surely in every team a player that can take long range for the frees. Now, I can understand one or two. I mean, for like Stephen Cluxton, who is excellent at them, but I see a lot of goalkeepers coming up and they might get 1 out of 3 or 1 out of 4. It bemuses me, to be quite honest.
Right, okay. Billy, thanks very much for taking the call.
No problem.
Dara, great to finally get to interview you.
Oh, really, yeah.
why is
it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I haven't been asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me? I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and just play for myself, and an inter-county corner forward isn't just hatching inside either. Unfortunately for you, Woolly, it won't last forever. You can ask ex-players that. You can ask, you know that yourself, Woolly.
Yeah, mine never started at all.
Yeah, well, that's neither here nor there.
Cork are a real strange one in the context of 2015. They almost beat Kerry. They should have beaten Kerry down in Killarney. They're defending All-Ireland champions. They've won 10 of the last 13 Munster championships. So, like, I mean, we're talking about Kerry now, about having all this underage talent. Like, 10 of the last 21 under-21s. Like, that's an incredible stat. And, you know, where they are now. And you hear Billy Morgan kind of talking about other fellas being in the line for the jobs before Healy, and, you know, the facilities not being up to scratch, or the commitment to having, you know, the setup that they want, and the best man for the job not getting the job because of these kind of restrictions. And you kind of look at it and think, there's an awful lot wrong with Cork football. Like, I mean, they had two wins, lads, against Derry and Fermanagh, who were relegated in Division 2. Like, this is as low Cork have sunk in a long time.
Yeah, they certainly didn't kick on from where they're at in 2010, and you know, that stage they were.
They won two leagues after 2010. Yeah. They hung around for a couple of years in the mix. Now, their championship performances obviously didn't, but like, it's since around 2012 the tail off.
Donegal beat them, I think it was the quarter final in 2012, and from that there they've really slipped off the radar.
Yeah,
in terms of,
because they were favourites for that game, so they were still around the house at 2012.
Yeah, and you know, I would have played a few challenge games against Cork when I was over the under 21s at Armagh, and they were always spoken about as being All-Ireland contenders, and they were brilliant. Some brilliant young talent coming through, and yes, they've won 10 out of 13 under 21 Munster titles, but they haven't won a Munster senior title since 2012. So what is happening to these players? Are they going off the radar totally? Are they actually breaking through and the team's too young or whatever? You know, I don't believe. I think one of the biggest problems in Cork is that they changed the management team too often at senior level, and there's no proper structure and stability there for the players to actually try to get a game plan going.
Yeah, well, the problem is, I think they've been tactically naive with managers. I think they're way behind as regards strength and conditioning. I think they're behind regards facilities. There's talk, Paddy Kelly was in the Examiner, talking in the Examiner at the start of this year, and he talked about going around begging for a pitch, not knowing where they were training. They had to go train in Fermoy, and Fermoy had no strength and conditioning facilities. Yeah. So the players had to actually ship weights into this facility in Fermoy and actually decorate a makeshift kind of gym, and this is what they're using. And he was saying that they actually use their own private transport to get these weights in here. Well, like, I mean, is that the setup that's going to inspire you to want to play for Cork?
Certainly not, and the players shouldn't be taking that on their shoulders, because they are tasked with trying to put in performances and training sessions. You know, it's not what you would expect from one of the bigger counties in the country, a county that's putting in a state-of-the-art stadium at the minute, you know, putting millions upon millions of euros into that there, but not being able to put in the proper facilities for their players.
Yeah, it's an ego trip, is Páirc Uí Chaoimh, and I'll tell you why, because Derek Kavanagh was talking in the Irish Examiner as well about this. There's only going to be that main pitch in Páirc Uí Chaoimh and in all weather. So there are many teams under county level that Cork have. The problem with pitches is still going to be there. Like, yeah. I mean, if you were building a big state of the art, you want 7 or 8 pitches. You want enough to have this centre of excellence. Like, I mean, that's forward planning. And the other thing with Páirc Uí Chaoimh is, Munster already have Thurles, which is the home of hurling. They have the Gaelic Grounds, which is a huge stadium as well. How many big games is Páirc Uí Chaoimh even going to get?
Yeah.
Like, the most amount of games they're going to have, lads, is county championship games. They might have one glamour game during the summer. Two at the very, very most. For this stadium that's cost a fortune, it's an ego trip as far as I'm concerned.
It certainly has cost way and above what any other county stadium has cost anyway. And I don't know what the overall cost was for the likes of Garvahi, which Tyrone play out and train from, but it certainly wouldn't have touched what is costing Cork to put in this stadium. And as you say, you know, they don't have the facilities that Garvahi have there for their players, the gyms, the arenas that they can have team meetings.
Yeah, there will be a gym in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, but the pitches-wise, you know.
Pitch-wise, you know, you need to cater for all of your county teams, and Cork being a dual county in particular, you know, the standards are set high from the playing point of view, so you know the facilities should be put in place for those players as well to be able to carry out and perform at a high level. Listen, I know their hurlers performed exceedingly well last weekend, but you know, to get that on a consistent basis, and this is where the footballers are probably falling short in now, you know, it's not the work and the structures aren't being put in the background, and the facilities in the background to help these guys maintain a positive future for that county.
Yeah, and then you have Daniel Goulding, you have Paddy Kelly, you have Fintan Gould, who are all 31, like Billy was talking about, and they're retiring. Now, I know Paddy had injury problems, but Paddy was very strong in that interview at the start of this year about the problems with Cork football. So you're looking in from the outside and you're thinking, just these fellas don't have the conditions to be the best that they can be.
Is there potential here, though, for something similar to what happened with the hurlers? So, like, you know, they're still Cork. They still have a good team. People will still fear them, and they can turn around on a Sunday and shock someone or catch someone. I mean, like you mentioned off air, it was only 2 years ago they went to Kerry and drew with them. Yeah. Should have beaten them in the replay. I know the statement that the county board released afterwards was a bit cringeworthy, but they had it. You know, they were complaining about the referee, and they did complain about the conditions as well, but they were only kicking off a ball away from playing for Manning in an All-Ireland quarter final.
Listen, they always have the capabilities, they have the talent, but they don't hold the fear factor that they did maybe 5 or 6 years ago.
No.
And that's a key thing with Cork when they're coming up against the team. I know, coming towards the end of my career, we played Cork in a few league games, and I was thinking, these boys are 6'2", 6'3", powerhouses. You know, we really have to think about how we're going to play against them, if we're going to compete with them. And, you know, there was one game in particular that we travelled to Cork, and they were just so strong. You know, we stayed with them for maybe 45 minutes of the game, but in the last 25 minutes, they just pulled away because of their athleticism and their fitness and their strength. And, you know, they really didn't kick on from that. There. And that fear factor, I know if I was still playing and I was going down to play Cork now, that fear factor wouldn't be there.
Yeah, and when they won the All-Ireland, they had an identity. They were a running team that played a running game. Now, you could criticise whether it was great to watch or not. It probably wasn't brilliant to watch. But did Pearce O'Neill, you know, did runners, did Noel O'Leary, did Paddy Cassan, and they maybe ran Graham Canty. At times, they took too much out of the ball, but there was always support runners, and they had an identity. Then Cuthbert took over, and he tried to change things and went more with a kicking game. And at the start, it worked absolutely brilliant. And then it all kind of fell apart. I think what really ruined Cork was the Munster final down in Páirceachaoimh against Kerry in 2014, when the Cork were favourites to win that game, and Kerry hammered them. And it was the year Kerry kind of took a few steps forward, and Cork haven't, I don't think they've recovered from that hammering in front of their own supporters in that Munster, I'm pretty sure it was a Munster final. You know, and that Cork since 2014 have really been on a bad slide, because Cuthbert lost all faith in what he was doing. He got the sack, now Healy's in. And what kind of a team are Cork now?
Well, 2015 they had a chance, and they probably should have won a Munster title in 2015, but for some dubious decisions. But, you know, they haven't.
15 was Cuthbert's last year, yeah.
They haven't really, you know, recovered from that heavy defeat in 2014 and the heartbreak of the Munster final in 2015 as well. So,
yeah.
You know, Kerry did come back in the replay and beat them quite convincingly again.
And, like, I mean, since Patrick Healy has taken over, it has been a disaster. And he was a huge, even Billy Morgan said, he was a huge shock to get that job. He was just parachuted in. He wasn't really in the reckoning until the last minute when he got that job. Like, I mean, which is a strange one. And under his management, they have been relegated from Division 1. They have been beaten by Tipperary for the first time since, I think it was the 1940s or something. Like, incredible stuff. They had a very bad championship, and then they had a disastrous league. So I'm looking at Cork, and I understand your point, Conan, because on any given day, you can kind of say Cork will be Cork, and they could beat someone. But not on the evidence of the record under Patrick Healy. Like, there's no point in saying it. There's nothing to suggest Cork are going to have a good championship here. They'll beat Waterford, obviously, but I think they play Tipperary then, and I mean, that's a 50-50 game.
Yeah, but Paul Kerrigan's coming out and saying that, you know, they've got the ability to get to the last four, and they probably do, because they're in an easy enough province, and depending on the draw they get, they might get a run, but, you know, they certainly won't get through the last four, based on previous year's experience or evidence. But, you know, it's hard to know. Cork are one of the most frustrating teams to watch, because sometimes when you expect too much of them, you know, they fail to deliver, and then when you don't expect anything, they're capable of putting in a performance. But, you know, they've got to be hurting heavily and a lot from last year's defeat to Tipperary. And, you know, they are speaking, one of their ex-players, I can't remember his name, spoke, you know, he's a dual winner in 89-90. He spoke about, you know, when beating Waterford quite convincingly and getting another go at Tipperary. So it'll be interesting to see what type of attitude they take into the Waterford game, first and foremost. Are they going to be complacent, or are they going to go with the right attitude and put in a performance and get a victory and have the chance to play against Tipperary?
Yeah, no, it'll be very interesting to see. Conan, we're going to talk about Derry now, and I want you to paint a picture to me and Stevie about the state of this Derry team or Derry panel.
Do you know what's really concerning me is that everyone's talking about this weekend. They're like, oh, there's nothing on apart from Tyrone and Derry. Like, this is not a contest. Like, you know, Owen Mulligan came out, his coach got a bit of traction, but they weren't strong enough. Like, he said Derry don't really have a chance, but, like, that's sort of giving them too much of a chance, then they don't have a chance. Like, this is going to be an annihilation. Like, there's like speaking to people very close to the camp and stuff, like, there, no one's really giving them a chance. Like, and you know, I looked at some of the stats. There's 30 players missing from last year's panel.
Now, hang on. Can you repeat that and say 1-3 or 3-0?
3-0.
30 players missing from last year's panel.
No, it was a big panel. And
well, okay. The biggest panel in Ireland.
Okay,
so there was 100.
No, that would have been out of a panel of 50, a training panel or something. Right, yeah. Okay. So there's 30 players dropped off from last year in some capacity.
And it wasn't even a good panel.
Jesus.
And there are 12 big names on it. Like, you know, I think I sent it through to you earlier. You're talking like Thomas Malin. The three goalkeepers from last year are gone. Thomas Malin walked out during the week. Apparently he's not happy because he's not going to be starting on Sunday. And I can see why, because he's definitely the best kicker in Derry. He's been really solid for the last 5 years.
Best kicker, but is he the best keeper?
I think he is, yeah. Like, but I mean, his kicking's on a different level to everyone. Like, you
okay,
know.
So I'll name out some names of the bigger names here, and let me know why they've dropped off. Sean Leo McGoldrick.
Now that's a real touchy one, like, because no one knows. None of the Coleraine lads have committed, and like Coleraine would normally make up 6 or 7 of the squad. Like, there's
so no one from Coleraine, and you say no one from Belahi's on the panel either.
No one from Belahi. Now Belahi aren't as good as they used to be, but traditionally, if Derry are going to be kicking, they need Belahi. But they still have Peter Cassidy, he's Damien Cassidy's son, and he's a real quality player. Won Hogan Cups. Like, he's a proper good midfielder, like, class. He should be in that panel.
Right.
You have Owen and Declan Brown there, could be in the panel too, but they're not there.
What about Christopher Bradley then? We all know him from Slotnail. He's an excellent player.
Yeah, he was in and out, like, over the last few years. He was in last year, but never really committed to the county setup.
Right. So that's more him. Emmett Bradley,
see, that's a strange. He started against Donegal in 2014. He's a young lad. Like, now, by all accounts, he wasn't happy before that he wasn't making the team when Fergal Doherty and Patsy Bradley were on then, which is a big statement for a young lad to say.
Absolutely,
like,
yeah.
That's a bit cocky, you know, alright. And you're saying there's only one recognised midfielder in the whole squad?
Well, I can only see Conor McAtamney there. Now, somebody else might stick their hand up, but like, he's the only one really playing week in, week out with his club at midfield, and he's only 21, 22, like, and not a lot of experience.
He's a big range.
I'm looking at predicted half four line of Enda Lynn, Mark Lynch and James Keel, like, them guys have size, you know what I mean?
But can they run with Sludden and Hart and McCann?
That's Derry's big problem playing Tyrone last year, because this isn't a case that Derry were naive and pushed up on Tyrone and got caught in the attack. Derry left enough men back, they just didn't work, they didn't track the runners, they just looked lazy, and they looked like, almost looked like they were shell shocked at the Tyrone runners, as in what did you expect, Derry? Like, come on.
I mean, I look at that Derry team, and they're two good lines. They've got a good solid fullback line. You'll probably have Cardin McKay, Chris's brother, Brendan Rodgers, and another slot leading man, and Conor Evans, super Ballon d'Or player. Like, that's a good fullback line, but you don't really need a good fullback line against Tyrone. And then the half forward line's probably the best one of Lynn, Lynch, and Keel.
Yeah, but Keel will be too lazy, and Lynch will be too lazy to follow the Tyrone runners, right? You know, and you don't want them.
You would
really
expect
chasing.
That would be the case, but it'll be interesting to see what tactics Damian Barton takes into this game. Will he retract players back and give them specific roles of playing sweeper systems and try to push up? But I'm looking, they don't have the same legs and energy that Throne would have to get back up the pitch and consistently, you know, challenge and contest for scores as well. But you know, there is quality players in that team. Brendan Rodgers for me is one of the best, most
very
outstanding
good,
fullbacks in the country, and has proved it over the last couple of years with Slotnail. Really put top class forwards on their backside and the back foot, and, you know, can get up the field and get a score as well. But, you know, his role will certainly be different with Derry than what it was with Slotnail.
Should it be, though, or should you say to Christy McCaig and Brennan Rodgers, I want you to do exactly what you did with Slotnail? That completely, you know, it's one of Slotnail's biggest weapons, and you're in with me now, lads. Don't change your game one little bit. We need runners from deep, and you're two of the best ball carriers that we have.
Well, and what they do with Slotnail is that they're very, very patient, and they go maybe to their opponent's half forward line. If they don't see an opening, they come all the way back. And, you know, Throne's game plan and setup would be ideal for this. They don't attack until they actually do see an opening, so they are very patient with Slotnail. But will the 15 players taken to the pitch show the same type of patience? Chrissy McCaig might be able to carry it out, Carl McCaig, Brenton Rodgers, but across the board, have the rest of them got the same patience?
Well, it's funny you say Brendan Rodgers, though, but, like, and I'm his biggest fan, but, you know, it was last year at Celtic Park, he had the ball on Tyrone's 45. Now, he's playing full back, but everyone from Tyrone retreated back. Derry were naive enough to come at them. Rodgers lost the ball on Tyrone's 45.
There you go.
9 seconds, it was a goal. Yeah. That was the first goal of the game. And
another thing, Conan, is there's one thing I often think Brendan Rodgers is like, I mean, it's high risk what he does. He actually carries the ball past lads.
Yeah.
At intercounty level, the strength and conditioning, you don't brush past lads like you would at club level, for example. You know, it's much more difficult. It's much more high risk. And, you know, when he does it against fellas who are stronger than him, you're not breaking past these lads. Like, I mean, you're just not doing it.
And I think it's different even tactically. Like, you know, Mickey Hurt's wily enough. He'll set traps. Like, he'll nearly want Rodgers to think, I can go on here, and then they'll nearly target, like hammer to hammer, as they say. Like, let him run, and then we'll catch him where he can't recover from it.
Yeah. We said that after the All-Ireland Club final. What I definitely remember saying is that if I was playing slot nail, my message to my team would be, in the first 5 minutes, I want McCaig and I want Rodgers nailed. You know what they're going to do. You know what they're going to do.
That's what
happened. And the lift that will give us. So if you think Mickey Hart isn't saying that, like, I mean, you know, nail these two. Like, I want them on their arses in the first 5 minutes. I don't care who does it, and that's the message we'll put them back. You know what I mean? But I didn't see it happening enough at club level, but I'm sure Mickey Hart is 100% going to, like, someone's going to do it.
Then the other thing is that Rodgers has been playing with the herders the last few weeks. I mean, he's absolutely running riot for them, but, you know, he's probably not, I don't know if he's missing training or anything with the footballers, but obviously he's focusing on the hurling for a little bit while the football had a bit of an off season.
You see,
he's banged on hat-tricks for them.
Yeah, that would frustrate the life out of me. You know, if I was an intercounty manager and I was trying to get my team's preparations right, you know, for Damien Barton, that's bound to be frustrating. That one of his best players that he hasn't, maybe he has had him at training sessions, but, you know, he wouldn't have had him at too many if he's, you know, consistently playing with the hurlers over the last couple of weeks. And you know, a player of his ability, you know, you can expect the hurlers want their piece of him as well, and that's fine. But from a management point of view, it would really, really frustrate the life out of me that one of my key players in preparation coming in against one of the contenders for the All-Ireland this year and thrown in the first round, you know, is missing for a large chunk of our training sessions. That would be hard to implement a system on defensive structure.
It's definitely an interesting one, how to use Chrissy McCaig and Bradley and Brendan Rodgers. I'm almost thinking, lads, don't play your natural game against Tyrone, because that's the trap that they're going to set for you, because, like, I mean, it's a higher level than club. Just on the retirements as well, Conan, to paint a bigger picture, like, I can't believe Derry actually have a team and we're picking out two lines on the field that actually look half decent with the players they're missing. Like, you're looking at the retirements then of Gerard O'Kane. He was retired before last year, right? Fergal Doherty, Patsy Bradley, Owen Bradley. Like, they're four players that will get in most teams in the country. They've just recently retired. On top of all this huge list of players that aren't committing, and you still look at the Derry team and you say, right, yeah, it's a Division 2, bottom half Division 2 team. What the hell would Derry be like if everybody committed and they had a Jim McGuinness over them? Like, I mean, are we overplaying? Are all these players that aren't playing of a similar standard, you know, and there wouldn't be too much difference?
There's quality there that's missing. There's no doubt about it. Dermot McBride is another player, a cornerback who's a quality player and a tough, tenacious defender. But one key player missing there is Patsy Bradley for me. You know, he was outstanding for Slot Neil throughout their campaign to the All-Ireland final. You know, for a guy in his 30s to lead that area the way he did, and probably not the biggest of midfielders, but I'll tell you what, he's got one of the biggest hearts out there.
There's no doubt. Don't get Conan started on Patsy
Bradley.
He's
actually choking up here thinking of him. But, like, he's been plugging along for 13 years for Derry, and, you know, sorry.
The tears are dropping.
No, but, like, yeah, and, like, but you add those recent retirements on top of the like of Muldoon and the like of Paddy Bradley. Like, you know, Derry had a bit of underage success a couple of decades ago. Like, they had under 21 All-Ireland, minor All-Ireland, but they relied too heavily on that one generation, and they pushed him through, and they had a good team for a while during the noughties, as we call them, but they never had anybody to replace him. So eventually, as those guys went one by one, this is what we're left with now.
Yeah. Listen, we've done plenty on Derry there. We're not going to talk about Tyrone. We talked about them a lot during the league, and myself and Conan are going to the match. Stevie, are you going to this match? Or
No, I won't be going to
this match. You'll be watching on television anyway.
I'm building my hopes up for next week down in Armagh.
Okay, right. Well, we'll talk loads about Tyrone. We'll give you our thoughts.
I am delighted that you're going to another Ulster game, though.
Yeah, I'm all over the Ulster Championship this year, but they're all mismatches. That's the problem. I predicted this, lads. I predicted these mismatches. Matches. I predicted them. You didn't like it, but I predicted them. Come here, I want to get predictions off you here before we go on, because we're going to give Twitter a chance to ask a few questions of us here in the last section instead of predictions. Because as we know, predictions are bloody boring at the start of the championship. Yeah. It's not like the league where you could actually do decent predictions. So we're going to do predictions. So first, Tyrone Derry, lads. You see, this is how boring it is. We're all going to go for Tyrone here, right?
Yeah, but let's have a look at the handicaps and see.
It's minus four, something ridiculous. I actually tweeted Paddy Power today. They asked for -12 odds, but they haven't gotten back to me yet. But
well, then just go all over -4. Then that makes absolute sense. If that's what it is, -4, that sounds like a brilliant bet. If you've listened to this podcast and you know the state of Derry football is in, and you know their half forward line isn't too hot and working. Let's add all that up.
That's my predicted half forward line. It might not
be. I would be going with throwing -4 in this one at 10 to 11, there's no doubt.
Right, yeah, that's a great bet. Okay, we'll go Waterford Cork is a very obvious one as well. Cork to win for me, it's in Farher Field. I think I might have played there bloody back in the 90s, but
I played there in 2003.
It's nothing to write home about anyways, yeah. from my memory.
First round of the qualifiers, I think that's where it was.
Right, yeah, you know you've sunk when you're down in Farher Field, Stevie.
So we went to the All-Ireland final that year.
Well, you did, but you'd lost the first round against Monaghan, right? So, right, okay, so we'll all go for Cork here. I think that's fairly obvious. The other two are fairly close. Clare and Limerick. I'm going for Clare because, you know, it is a bit closer. It's in Cusick Park. Clare are, I think they're just gone a level above Limerick. They have some great players. There's some great forwards. They've obviously got Gary Brennan in midfield. They've got a lot more danger. Limerick had a very disappointing league. For those reasons, I'll be going for Clare.
Yeah, I'll be sticking with Clare as well. Clare had a decent championship run last year, and they're a side that is certainly improving, and you know they've got a fantastic midfielder in Gary Brennan that inspires his teammates and drives the team forward, and I will go for them.
Yeah, Conan.
Clare
as well. Right, okay, so the one that's probably most 50-50 is London against Leitrim. This is in Ruislip. It's in the quarter final of Connacht Championship. They played in the league, lads, and Leitrim beat them 2-15 to 16 points. So it was by no means an annihilation, and we know Carrick and Shannon is a terrible place to go and get a result. Leitrim are very good there. So this is one which is a complete toss up for me. I think London could potentially cause a shock here, especially at home. And I think I'm going to go for this shock, the first, like a big shock.
Is this
in the championship.
The official opening of the new Ruislip Stadium as well?
Oh, I'm not too sure about that. It could be.
I'm actually going to go for London in this particular game. You know, they have come quite close in the last couple of years. They actually beat Leitrim a few years ago, was it?
Leitrim.
So I fancy their chances at 13-8. I think it's a great bet that. From what I've heard, Owen Mulligan won't be playing, by the way. So if he's not able to get into the team, there must be something there that's quite capable of performing at championship level. So I'm going to go for London this one.
Yeah, Conan?
I'm going to go for Leitrim just to mix it up a little bit.
Okay, so we've gone for Tyrone to beat Derry, Clare to beat Limerick, Cork to beat Waterford, and Conan's gone for Leitrim. Myself and Stevie have gone for the shock with London. All right, next up, we'll take some of your Twitter questions.
Somebody said it's as ugly as Marty Morris here for both.
We body in fairness, he wouldn't know a penalty if it bit him in the arse. I mean,
what is the point of this? They swear allegiance to the cult of Cairn.
But I'll tell you what, you can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
Is managing Mead at some stage in for the rest of your life a pebble in your shoe that you want to get out?
No, I think I've got over that.
Have you?
If I went to do that, sure, who'd keep manners on Joe Brawley on the Sunday game? And you couldn't expose the nation to him on his own, could you?
AIB, backing club and county.
All right, lads, had a good response on Twitter this morning. Some of the questions stupid, a little bit like kind of a GA message board type thing. Name the top 8 teams in the country, that type of thing. I pulled out the best ones that we could. First one I have is Jason McDonnell. He's at Button Moon 1979. His question is, can you discuss the option of playing all Leinster provincial games outside of Croker until the final? Would be so much more fun. That's from Jason. We talked about this, lads. We talked about the Leinster Championship could be an awful lot much better spectacle if we weren't in a half-empty Croke Park. I think that would be a fantastic idea.
I think Jason must have been listening to my idea.
Yeah, is that your idea?
Yeah, well,
I think I could claim that idea.
I was
too.
Saying that the biggest problem with Leinster is Croke Park, and every time you think of a Leinster Championship, you think of an empty Croke Park.
Yeah.
It just ruins the whole atmosphere. And even when you see Dublin, as it's going to be an annihilation, it still looks cool in Nolan Park, and like all the Laois fans are there. And
the game with Carlow and Dublin in Portlaoise is going to be a brilliant occasion.
Yeah.
It's going to be a brilliant occasion.
Yeah.
Why can't we have a semi-final at a brilliant occasion? Dublin, Kildare, even in O'Connor Park, in a Moor Park again. Yeah. These are stadiums that have capacities of 25,000.
There certainly is good stadiums in Leinster.
There are.
That are quite capable of catering for these type of games. You know, I look at the Leinster Championship and too many games are played in Croke Park, and I would be a fan of going to Leinster finals on a regular basis, and the problem is then when you come to a Leinster final, the stadium's not even packed for it. Yeah. You know, so take all the games away from it, and then when there is a big game, a Meath versus Dublin in a final or a Kildare versus Dublin, you know, you would expect more people to travel into Croke Park for that type of game.
I think you're right. And and plus, if these games are not in Croke Park, there's a bigger chance that the games will be a little bit closer, so there'll be a bit more interest in a Leinster final, as in,
and
you know,
more
Dublin only
more
beat
atmosphere created,
Dublin beat Meath in O'Connor Park by 5 points instead of Dublin beat Meath by 12 points in Croke Park. You know, so you might actually think Kildare might beat them in Croke Park. Kildare won't beat them, but you might have more of a chance of getting more people in Croke Park.
There was a quarter final there last year. I think it was Wexford and Kildare or something, like with about 20 people sitting lying over a seat with their feet up. It just looks awful.
Yeah, here's another question, lads. I want to. It's been asked on Twitter. It's from Kitog. I'm not sure what his actual handle is, but this is one you hear regularly, and I want to get your thoughts on it, or he wants to get your thoughts on it. Would an all-star team of the Leinster counties even stand a chance against the Dubs? Now, you hear this a lot, you know, that the Dublin or the Leinster football is so crap that the Dublin would beat the pick of it. My opinion is Dublin would not beat the pick of Leinster counties. You would have forwards of the calibre of Niall Kelly, Graham Riley, Paddy Brophy, Donny Kingston, Andy MacDonald, Niall McNamee, John Heslin. Now, come on now, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Brendan Murphy, John O'Loughlin, Brendan Quigley, Tommy Moolley, Kevin Feely in midfield. Like, I mean, that's not even talking about the defenders. Stop this nonsense that Leinster is just an absolute basket case and Dublin would beat the pick of them. It's not the reality. There is serious quality, but
you know, to go deeper into the question that's asked, you know, those guys, the pick of the Leinster players will have to be training, you know.
It's a silly fantasy question, but I don't ruin it, Stevie. No, I'm not going to ruin it. You've got to talk about systems the Leinster team would have to kind
but
of
that's
use.
What they would have to do, you know. You would have to give them the fair crack of the whip as well, but there's no doubt some of the players that you've named off there are top class marquee players in this country, and they're the type of players that you pay in the sea, and absolutely, you know, I would expect the cream of the crop of all the other counties that would definitely pull it up and possibly beat Dublin.
But the question is, how many Dublin players would make that team? Like, would you get the majority of Dublin players still into that team if you did a 12 county thing?
I don't know. I'm not going to think of that off the top of my head, but I think talent wise, if you're picking a 15 from the rest of the counties in Leinster, I would say they would be stronger on paper than the Dublin team. I think it would be very close. I think this
Wouldn't
idea
it be
that Dublin
a great
would
idea
beat them,
to watch that game as a charity spectacle or something towards the end of the year, and
just
see
maybe
how
have that the Leinster final every year.
But I mean,
wouldn't that be great?
The whole back seven would be Dublin probably, though, in my opinion.
Yeah, well maybe. It's hard to know, but listen, we don't want to go too far into this because we don't have time. So the next question is, this is an interesting enough one. Would all the weaker counties be better off if they concentrated on either hurling or football? Are they spreading too thin playing both? And I suppose you think of Carlow, who tried their very best to play both. Like, I don't want to throw Laois in there because Laois are a traditional hurling county. You might look at Westmead. You might look at Armagh. Like, I know, like, Armagh would be very, very, you know, favoured towards football than hurling. But is there an argument that a lot of these counties are trying too much, and that if they just concentrated on one, like Kilkenny and hurling,
but
for example,
you can't say to someone who loves playing hurling in Armagh that, you know, we're a football county. You can't say that there, and that you won't have any opportunity or chances to play and represent your county at hurling grade. You know, in Armagh, you know, I think there's only something like 6 or 7 teams that play hurling, but I can tell you now, my own club is one of them. They love the game, and there's no way in hell that you'd ever win an argument with those guys saying that you can't represent your county. I think that it would never be able to happen. It would never be. You're taking, you know, one of our key games away from people, and you know that means that there's going to be less followers and less interest, and no, it certainly wouldn't happen for me.
Yeah, that was Irish Tommy who asked that question. I would agree with you, Stevie. I think it, like, we're GAA people. Like, GAA is both games, and that's just the reality of it. I don't think Kilkenny, I'm massively critical of Kilkenny. I think it's shocking what they do with Gaelic football. Cavan disbanded their hurling team in the last 2 or 3 years. They have one back again. What Cavan actually did was very, very interesting, in that the resources they were putting into the senior team, they disbanded the senior team and they put the resources into underage hurling, and they said, look, we're not at the races with our senior hurling team. Now, whether you like it or not, players might have been disgruntled that we've no senior team, but they went to start at the bottom with coaching and they hope to have a better senior team in the years come. I thought that was a decent idea, you know what I mean? Like, maybe thinking a little bit differently instead of plodding along in these weaker counties doing the same thing. Actually, you know, maybe try something different.
Certainly there's a good argument behind that as well. But I look at my own county, Armagh, and for years and years, you know, we weren't the strongest hurling county in going, but certainly over the last 5-6 years they've gone from strength to strength
and are
an improving side because they've been given an opportunity to go and compete in competitions that were getting competitive games, and they are getting better for it.
Yeah, and there's this rule now where you can have the outsiders as well. You can have, I think it's up to 5. Kildare have a lot of them. I think Kildare beat Armagh.
Kildare have a ridiculous amount of them. I remember being at that game.
We had John Mulhall here from, he won All-Ireland with Kilkenny. He's on the Kildare team now. He's a great hurler. Right, last one. This is from Owen George on Twitter, and he asks, which county can go and shock the country and do a Leicester City on it and win Sam? He says Down were the last team to come close to doing it. Down came out of nowhere in 2010 to get to a final. Now Donegal obviously won an All-Ireland in 2012, which was pretty Leicester City, only they had a great year in 2011, so it's probably not on those lines. Down came from nowhere completely. Donegal in 2012 came from 2011 came from nowhere, if you get what I'm saying. Is Dublin Kerry and these teams too strong now that there's a Mayo, that there's no opportunity for a team to be able to
Donegal
do that?
Weren't really from no, like Donegal always had a good squad and just needed Jim McGuinness to come in and grab it by the horns and take it somewhere else.
But they did come from, they were like gone so low that they kind of did come from nowhere.
The thing is, in sport, I always believe that anything can happen, but consistently, can you win enough matches to win at the top level? If you're asking for, you know, a team there that I believe could be a real good outside bet, that wouldn't be spoken about in the top 5 or 6, I'd be looking at Galway.
Yeah.
Oh, not this again.
Yeah, well, I agree. I think Galway have to tweak their system a little bit and use the brilliant forwards that have a little bit to better effect. I think they definitely have the personnel to be getting there. They've got a quality manager
as well.
Yeah, a very good manager. Well, I think he needs to prove himself as a very good manager now and realise that, you know, going as defensive with the players he has probably isn't. He's got them to where he has them, and he needs to get the most out of these pretty lethal forwards that they have.
They have lethal forwards, but maybe it's a case of, you know, getting them stronger at the back as well, and you know, have it a two-way thing. You know, if they become solid, more solid at the back, they're leaking less opportunities, but on the counter-attack, that they're going at pace and really utilising the strength that they have, which is their forwards, then, you know, I think they could have a special blend there.
Yeah, I will go Galway. Colin, I see you staring at the ceiling there. You're looking into the middle distance there.
I'm thinking about Patsy Bradley is what I'm doing. I don't think it's possible they breach the top three, Mayo, Kerry and Dublin. I don't think it is, unfortunately. But if anybody has a chance, I don't know, you probably won't agree with this after last Sunday, but I think it's Monaghan or maybe Tyrone as well. But if, like, Monaghan have two of the best forwards.
But those two teams are in the top six, they're not your Leicester cities.
Yeah, well, then no, it's not possible.
I think that day is gone. Like, Tipperary obviously came from nowhere last year, so it is possible to get somewhere if you get a run and you avoid the big guns. And if we were sitting here at the start of last season, we wouldn't be predicting Tipperary. So, I mean, I suppose it is possible. It's 100% not possible to do a Leicester City and win it.
Forget about that.
But it's possible for a banger to come out of nowhere. A Leash or a Meath, for example, or a Kildare could get to a semi-final. A lot of teams have done it. So I'm going to say Leash to get into an All-Ireland. To get into an All-Ireland quarter-final, and I think that would be on the equivalent of...
Well, they're one step closer at the minute than what Armagh are.
They haven't played yet. Listen, right, we'll leave it there. We'll be back on Monday with a review show. Like I said, we're going up to Celtic Park, so we'll have plenty of reaction from the victorious Tyrone team. I think we're pretty sure of that. So we'll talk to you on Monday. Good luck.
Yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.